boys and girls, it is George. I am here for our 100th edition of Mai Tai Happy Hour.
100!
Wow, you are hot.
I am hot.
In more ways than one.
I clean up really nicely.
You are like blowing up the levels.
You're welcome.
Wow, it's like there's an army of like crafty women just breaking down the door.
We didn't even start the show yet.
The heat is alive.
God damn it.
I was going to bring all your ex-girlfriends on today's episode.
No.
And chose not to.
Thank
because
you.
Some of them are.
Because you want to be my friend forever.
Some of them I'm afraid of.
George.
But instead, we got this guy named Frank.
I'm a surrogate.
he's crafty too in his own ways. And he's probably seen you naked, so you know there's that too.
That doesn't narrow it down.
Not a short list.
I am so happy that we've made it to episode 100. I don't know how the hell we did this.
Congratulations.
Well, we stopped drinking. I think that really helped work in our favor.
That is one of the weirdest things that if you had told me we would have 100 episodes of anything, I would have said you're insane.
I think we did okay, man.
So what do we have in store today?
So,
introduce your friend.
Well, first off, my lifelong friend Frank Iero is here, and he's here to join us for our 100th episode. We're going to have a quick little interview with Frank. We're going to talk about the punk canon, our punk rock canon, which has become highly controversial. We are also going to talk a little bit about the G.G. Allin documentary.
Which everybody should see.
Which everybody should absolutely see. And I am going to teach you how to make a cocktail.
Nice.
You should always wait until I finish drinking out of the water before you like...
I didn't say anything so funny that you were going to spit. I felt like I was safe.
I just didn't have enough room for the water and the microphone and my mouth. It was very... Very strange, but I'm excited for this cocktail.
Like all right.
Is this an anniversary cocktail? Is it something epic?
It's not an anniversary cocktail because, you know, our cocktail list goes on and on and on. We are still in the month of January, which is our AKA month, also known as month. So from the wonderful Sip and Safari, the 10th anniversary edition from Don the Beachcomber, we are going to go and we're going to do a fun drink. And tonight,
month of punch.
No, that's
month.
That's December.
That was December. Did we have a theme song for this one?
We don't have a theme song for this one. I feel like
does it rhyme?
No, I couldn't find anything good to rhyme with. It doesn't roll off the tongue like month of punch.
Month. I got nothing. I think we should just use that every time.
Every time.
Like week of punch. Punch of the week.
January. I don't know. It just doesn't really happen. So Missionary's Downfall is the drink I'm going to make for you tonight. And this is from Don's drink, Dispora, 1941 and 1971. So this in January is the also known as month. So this drink was known as a few different things in a few different tiki bars. So tonight, we're going to teach you about the Missionary's Downfall. So this is similar to a mojito in that you're going to put some fresh mint leaves in here. Now, this is a muddling cocktail. Headhunter's Lounge, you don't
not
like...
Not a fan.
You're not a fan of the muddle?
I don't like any kind of grass in my drink.
Really? What about...
I also feel like mint should be reserved strictly for gum and or toothpaste and not mix into food ever.
Well, that's a hot take for you folks.
Sorry. That's just my thing.
No, I know. I agree. I also think, you know, a lot of things I don't like to put in drinks. Like, I'm not a fan of cherries. I think cherries just belong on pies and slot machines.
That's because drinks shouldn't be pink. We learned that from the Ramones.
So this is not going to be a pink drink. It's going to be a little bit of yellow in color. It is with mint leaves. You're going to take 12 mint leaves, and you're going to put them in the bottom of a glass. Add a half ounce of simple syrup. You're going to muddle them together. And when you muddle... You want to bruise, not break. So whether you're making an old-fashioned or whether you're making a mojito or a Missionary's Downfall, bruise but not break with your muddle. Then you're going to add 2 ounces of Bacardi or whatever kind of light rum you have, half an ounce of peach schnapps, because, you know, someone brought a bottle of peach schnapps to your party, and you never got rid of it because no one drinks it. 2 ounces of pineapple juice. So after you've muddled, you're going to add some ice, and you're going to add the liquid in. You're going to shake it all up, and you are going to serve it as you would a mojito, the Missionary's Downfall. Now, the Missionary's Downfall was at Don the Beachcomber's. At the Lanai, it was the Franciscan's Downfall. At the Polynesian, the Apostle's Breakdown. The Bali High was the Padre's Pitfall. I love the alliteration. And at the Manukai Room, the Maiden's Downfall. So that comes from our wonderful 10th anniversary edition.
What's your favorite version of it?
They're all the same drink.
They're all the same drink.
It's all the same drink.
What do you like to say better?
What I like to say better? I like to say the Padre's Paradise.
I have a question. I don't know if you like to spend a lot of time on this, but...
Go for it.
As far as like muddling goes, like, is there a technique that you use rather than like in order to bruise and not break?
So when I first started bartending, that's actually a great question. When I first started bartending, I went to a bartending school in Verona, New Jersey.
Okay.
Because the bartenders at the Loop Lounge didn't want to teach me how to bartend because I was a bar back at the time.
Right.
And I was like, oh, come on, teach me. So they wouldn't teach me how to bartend. So I went to a bartending school and they were like,
What'd you go to a bartending school for? I would have taught you everything.
Right, yeah.
So they're going to teach me afterwards.
That seems like it's a lot like tattooing. Like, yeah. No one's going to teach you, but then they don't want you to go anywhere to find out.
Exactly. So they started teaching me how to muddle drinks because no one likes to make an old fashioned at the loop. They would actually just put the orange in there and just smash the hell out of it and smash the cherry and smash the sugar packets up because we had sugar packets, not simple syrup. We had a little water and sugar packets. Bob's your uncle. It's the poor man's simple syrup.
Right.
So then eventually I started going to tiki bars and I'd watch them do it and I would see them and they would just put the muddle stick into the glass and they would just gently kind of just push it down and just kind of turn it a little bit, just enough to rub it up against the glass itself. So that's what we call bruise, not break. You're not just mashing the shit out of it.
But you do want to get the essence of the mint out into the drink.
And you do that by rubbing it up against the glass and kind of bruising it and pushing it against the bottom. Because when you go to a place and you see the mojito and it looks like little pieces and flecks of mint floating around your glass, that means they beat the shit out of it. Okay, it's not going to taste right. But when you see beautiful, full mint leaves just kind of floating there in the glass, you know they did a good job and you're actually going to get the real mint flavor out of it. And it also goes double for when you're adding other things. Like, say, if you're going to make a blackberry mojito or a raspberry mojito, you don't want big speckles and chunks of your fruit floating around the glass. You want to kind of sit at the bottom and kind of just see those big, beautiful raspberries or blackberries floating in the glass. So that's kind of how, that's a tell.
So what's a poor man's muddler? If you don't have a muddler.
A Pez dispenser.
Pez dispenser?
No.
The back of a spoon. I mean, there's other things you could use.
Well, I mean, here's
come on.
No, honest to God. He asked what a poor, this is what I've used because when you think about it, when you're muddling, you don't want to take the back of a spoon because you're kind of putting it in the glass and you're going to be swishing around. Muddle needs to have a gentle push down. So a Pez dispenser, if you've got something with a really good phallic-looking head on top of it, like a Hulk or like a ghost, it's great. Or the Pez dispenser's feet works great for muddling. It's long enough, too. You'll be able to get fully in the glass and be able to muddle down.
The Pez dispenser, like the amount of volume of the drink it would take up to push in there would disturb the entire cocktail.
No, because you're putting in the small ingredients first, like the mint leaves and the sugar and stuff. So the Pez dispenser has free reign. There's nothing else in the glass because you're muddling the ingredients
first. A muddler on Amazon.com costs like $5. Like, yeah. Just spend the money on the muddler.
But here's the thing. I'm just saying, like, if you're the type of guy that wants to appear like a muddler, a professional muddler, but you don't actually have the materials and you're not, like, you invited a nice lady over, you want to appear like you've done this before, you don't have these
just
things.
Just picture him pulling out the Pez dispenser.
Pull out of their Pez dispenser out of your Pez dispensing pocket that you probably have.
I do.
And you go to work.
Listen, man, necessity is the absolute mother of invention. But make sure you offer some Pez first before you start your muddle. That's all I'm saying. That. It works.
So we're back on the air, Mai Tai Happy Hour, episode 100.
100.
We've got Frankie Arrow with us. Thank you so much for coming. I think you're down the street. You're not too far away, right? Don't give up where you are, but right. You're not too far away.
It could be an hour. It could be five minutes.
You're fairly nearby. Nobody knows where I live either.
Put yourself in Forest.
I don't know. All of a sudden, my Vespas will disappear out of my garage or something.
Well,
I
now
do
people
not...
know you have Vespas in the garage.
Really quickly, before we get into our interview, last week we talked about how old I am and how, like, it's just not working out turning 40.
Right.
Turns out I'm not just old and fucked up. I broke a rib.
Well, that'll do it.
Like, I actually have a busted. My T8 is fractured. I went to urgent care. I fell down the stairs. I was looking at my kid while I was coming down the stairs, and I'm like, why are you running around the hallway? And just, it sucks. It was the silent assassin. Just took me out.
I have a very, like, I realized that my father and my grandfather had, like, a weird thing about table corners. Like, they freak out about table. Like, if one of my kids is running around, they go, oh, wait, stop.
Yeah.
And they, like, always cover the table corner. I don't know what that is. But I have a thing about socks. If I see someone running in socks, I freak out and I tell them that they take their socks off.
Are you Greek by any chance?
No.
Because, like, my dad takes care of our child. My mom and dad, Yaya and Papu, take care of the kids during the day, and they are just as insane. Kid. But I fell down the stairs. I heard a crack, and I thought I broke my back. I'm just like, Allison, get me a pillow. And I'm Greek as well, so I just was like, oh, I'll be fine. And it didn't hurt. And like 4 days later, I woke up, and I'm like, oh, I slept on my back wrong. And then it just progressively didn't go away for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then did we talk about the zit on the air? No, I don't think we did.
No, we didn't. We talked about that over
brunch. It wasn't a zit. Like, I thought I had an ingrown hair on my back, and that's what was causing this pain. So it was generally in the general vicinity. Turns out, not a zit. I actually have a fractured hairline fracture on T8, and that and the one above and below are bruised. Cool. It's not turning 41. It's just being like dumb. And socks, people. We may have talked about this before, because I know I went down 16 steps last year. Socks are evil, and you mix socks and alcohol, and your life is over. Mm-hmm. Invest in the little ruggies for your stairs, or just don't wear socks. Or
right. And always tie your sneakers.
What about those socks with grips that you get in the hospital?
Ooh, those are good.
But you don't always have those with you. Yeah. Like, you just don't think. And we already had the argument. My wife's like, can't wear shoes in the house. I'm like, I'm punk rock. I wear shoes in the house. But
I think from now on, you're wearing shoes in the house everywhere you go. Just white rugs, fuck them. It's better than a broken back.
So, Frank, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I've been thinking about you guys a lot lately, because last year was like, I'm going to go get all my old punk rock tapes, and I'm going to digitize them. I'm like, my friend Josh had shot, and me had shot a lot at Maxwell's in the early 2000s, and he was wasting away these high tapes just sitting there. So I'm like, let's go like try to convert them, suck them into iMovie and spit them out, put them on YouTube. The world can enjoy them. I had some all stuff, great legendary all performance.
At Maxwell's?
Yeah, where they did, where Carl Alvarez did like a whole set of punk rock covers at the end.
Oh, wow.
But I also had a very early show of you guys. It was Hoboken. It was 2002. It was right after I interviewed you guys for the Belleville Times.
Okay.
You guys were opening up for the Lawn Darts.
I remember this
show. It was just one of the shows I wanted to get up, because I was like, we're sitting on these tapes. I want to get them out for the world to see, because why not? And I post it up, and then I get like barraged with comments. It's literally every day, every 10 minutes I get a comment from just people, fans. You have fans. They're wonderful. Some people don't like it. There is a lot of, there's some thumbs down. Like, there are thumbs down. Yeah. But for the most part, it's thumbs up and really excited people.
Where are they from? I'll go beat them up. I will fight them like this.
What blows my mind is like, I went through town. It's like 90% of these comments, it's the same thing. It's, I wasn't born yet.
Right.
And since we are,
is that the thumbs down?
Well, no. I don't think nobody really like. There maybe just one asshole who says some like whole horrible homophobic thing. But I delete those and just shoot it down. So I'm like, shut up, get off my page. But I just want to know, how does it feel knowing that so many kids weren't born yet when you guys were like on the cusp of coming out? You know, it was. Right. I think it was the record release party or something.
George, I feel like in the grand scheme of things, like if you think about, you know, like human existence, like a lot of people weren't born yet. So, like, it's okay. I feel like the majority of people.
Like, because I feel old reading the comments.
Here's the thing that's crazy to me is I've never watched something on YouTube or any sort of internet thing where I was like, I have to find the icon to thumbs up or thumbs down something in my life. I've just like been like, oh, I don't like this, or I do. Oh, I really like this. And yeah. I've never shared that with anyone else.
I rarely
in a digital form.
Not on YouTube. Like I do it on Facebook, because it's like I have to acknowledge my friend exists and I love them. And most of the time YouTube, they're not your friend. So when I first started becoming very good friends with Hambone, I was like, I gotta see what Hambone looks like when he was in your band and other bands.
Okay.
And I found this amazing gift. Someone's created a gift that's out there of you getting clotheslined by him.
Oh, yeah.
Like full on decked and knocked out at a Leatherface,
Leathermouth. Yeah.
Leathermouth, sorry, at one of those shows. And I'm just like, wow, like that is the most famous thing I can find of you on the internet, Hambone.
I took a bump real well.
It was brutal. People think you died. I think there's one of them says Hambone RIP as the meme.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do it for you too. I found some old Pensy Prep videos.
Oh my God.
I'm inspired by you as well, Hambone. 100th episode, I got to let it out.
Thank you.
But the second most commented thing about you was your dreadlocks.
Oh, shit. Oh,
is insane, the amount of people that comment on your hair.
Well, it was. It's a.
Was
it's a
there
pretty
a reason? Were you thinking? What were you thinking? Because that's, I think, where everybody says, like, what were you thinking with the dreads? What were you thinking? I'm going to ask you because you're sitting right
now. Well, it started out as a joke because we were in a band called, we're in Pensy Prep.
Right.
And our drummer at the time, Tim, was like really into like weird, like ICP and
super
like
new metal.
And like new metal-y weird shit, like Mudvayne and stuff. And we were driving the van and we were really, really bored. And I was like, Tim, I had like long hair at the time. And I just start knotting it. And I don't know why. I think I was just really high. And then, here's the thing. Then it got to a point where like, I couldn't get them out. So I was like, well, then I have to kind of go with this gun. I don't want to shave my head.
Right.
So I just had them and it took a while for it to kind of grow out.
The amount of people who comment on that is just amazing. I can't. So I had to ask you about it because that's like, what's up with the dreads? I'm like, all right, maybe I'll ask.
Weed and laughter, yeah. I think is what it was.
But Hambone, I mean, that's not as bad as your guyliner phase.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
what were you thinking during the guyliner phase? Was that just like
alcohol, man?
Like, it wasn't a girl. One day I'll get you to admit it was a girl.
It actually wasn't a girl. I just wanted to try. I've had the same haircut since I was probably 12 years old, and I wanted to try something different. I wanted in my mind it was going to be like a little more like glam rock and roll. I kind of missed the mark by like a half a mile, maybe. And I feel like that's conservative when I say that. I had a flat iron on the top of my head right now. There's definitely like burns on my like scalp from when I had a flat iron because this doesn't want to go like this. This is this. So, yeah, I mean, I had a bad haircut that lasted about 6 to 8 months. And then I went back to what you see here. Never stray. If you have a look that works for you,
don't do it.
Take it from me.
So never try something new.
Don't. Fuck that.
I've had a receding hairline. I've had this hair I've had since I was in like 11th, 10th grade. So the most I could do is shave the sides. And I'm like, oh, I could be Mike Patton if I grow it long. And like when he was going through his 90s mullet look.
Do you want to know the upside though?
What?
Since you've had that beard since the 9th grade, you've always been able to buy alcohol for your friends.
Truth be told, I only use the beard because I have a very weak jaw. And one day I was like, well, if you have a weak jaw, you have to grow a beard. Mm. And it works. It actually is. It's makeup for men.
It really
is. I don't know if you know that. Just grow a beard if you want to grow a jaw. I've realized that.
I've known a lot of guys with neck faces and they need to have some sort of like defining. You need it, you know what I mean?
We have some friends who have neck faces.
Yeah,
that's the thing, man.
I don't have a neck face. I have more like neck beard thing going. How have you seen the punk movement, like actually the punk scene, change and transition? People tell us, you know, we could say, oh, punk's dead, blah blah blah, everybody's always said that. Everybody's like, no, punk's just becoming MD or something. But what have you seen it since you're actually touring and deep into this?
That's a good question. I don't think it's as black and white or cut and dry as that. You know, I think that people are being influenced by things that are going on around them and you know, being born now and finding out about bands that they didn't get to see while they were around and kind of turning into something new. And the means are different, you know. They can make records in their room and put it up on a SoundCloud or something like that. They don't need anyone else. And I feel like the musicality isn't defining punk rock anymore. It's not about a genre. It's about the DIY ethic. And I think that's what's really come out of like punk rock and hardcore that we grew up with, is that now you find it more in like, you know, pop and rap and stuff that's happening just by kids doing it for themselves and for their friends.
I also feel that there's got to still be punk rock because the Descendants can still play and sell out large theaters. Rancid can do multiple nights, Terminal 5, Bad Religion. Clearly someone's paying to see this stuff. So there's, and it's not just our generation.
I don't know, man. I've been to some really great shows in New York, like, you know, young bands or even like, it's weird. Like you're seeing people that are now like, you know, in their late 20s and 30s, like starting their first band. It's
Which
crazy.
Is fucking cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Super good.
Yeah, you just got to look for it.
Okay.
Really.
And I'm trying not to play that old.
I hear you. It's that's
my
even,
wife
that's
will say that.
Say.
My wife will say, oh, no, you're just that old fart now, and that's how you're hitting it. But it's just, oh, no, I'd love to find new music.
There is ways to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is still happening. It is still happening.
Do you have a question? I have to throw it to you because I never let you talk when we do interviews.
Oh, I'm great.
It's just fine. It's all good.
No, it's fine.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I know you're here to look pretty.
I get by my looks mostly.
We one time interviewed Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
No way.
And he showed up like hungover and fucked up. Not fucked up. Like,
wait,
you know,
Brutus
he was,
came here?
No. We had to go to Brutus the Barber Beefcake. It's on the internet. And it is one of the worst. It wasn't Hambone's fault. Brutus was just a garbage person.
It was my fault.
And he just, no, you asked him.
Wait, where did you have to go to meet
Brutus? Punk Rock Flea Market.
We went to the Trenton Punk Rock Flea Market.
Okay.
I had been on it was my birthday. It was the day after my birthday party. I'd been on a 3-day bender by that point. I was doing everything I could possibly do in my power not to shit my pants that morning. And George brought me a bagel and a coffee, and I thought I was okay. And so in the morning we end up there, we see Brutus the Barber Beefcake there, and like, fuck it, let's interview Brutus the Barber Beefcake. And it just did not go well.
Really?
It did not go well. But subsequently, later that day, we went to see the Coffin Cats.
Yes.
And then I had a couple drinks with the Coffin Cats, and that interview came out much better.
Let's talk a little bit about, I think the word's out there, you have a new album coming out in the next couple months, maybe, or something like that.
That's possible.
And I hear you might have a new name for the band.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I changed the name.
You haven't solidified it yet?
I have solidified it. Okay. Yeah. Actually, I think I announced it New Year's. So it's Frank Iero and the Future Violence.
The Future Violence.
Yes.
And how does this fit into? First of all, why do you change? Like, you gave excuses to other people, like, oh, I changed it from like Celebration of Patience because of.
No, I change it every time.
Every time.
Every time.
Do you fire the band every time? Is it like you guys are all God? I need a new name. You're all God.
I do like to bring in new musicians for the different incarnations, but like it's not like I send people like
you're all fired
at the end of it. Yeah. No, I don't go
it's
like
Ghost. It's like Ghost.
I think it's nice to bring in new blood and get to play with new people and like, here's the thing, I've been at this for a really long time. There's people that I've met along the way that I've always wanted to play with and I've always wanted to write songs with, you know, that I've maybe, you know, played with other bands that they've been in, but I've never gotten to do it, you know, together in a band setting. And so now that I'm, you know, old and I have the opportunity, I'm like, fuck it, why not? You know, there's no rules.
I thought it was more some like restless creative syndrome is what I thought. It was
probably.
Like, I'm going to keep. You know.
Yeah, no. It's like when you chop down the whole field and like burn it down to the ground. And then
it's like, I'm free now. I'm going to do every type of music available and I'm going to have a new name for each. Is this sonically different than some of the other stuff you've done?
Yes.
What are you, can you talk at all about what type of music it's going to be?
It's weird, man, because it's always like, you know, like dancing about architecture, right? Like it's hard to like say, oh, well, this is, you know, there's these time signatures and stuff like that, or these are the influences. I feel like it needs to change every time. Mm-hmm. And one of the pitfalls of having a band, I feel like, is when you write that first record and then you go and you try to write a follow-up, everything changes. And people
Hambone says this all the time. Those are his words of wisdom.
It's true. Yeah, you have to. Otherwise, you know, what's the point? If you're not moving forward, you're dead. You know, to move forward artistically, you have to kind of change everything. And then the pitfall is people are like, well, it doesn't sound like the same band. And you're like, no shit. Like, you know,
right,
doing something new.
That said, do you feel like there's always that thing where, like, when you break down a house, so you go and you buy a house, and to get the permit to make the house, you have to leave one wall.
Okay.
Do you feel like in a lot of ways, like say artists who do that kind of thing where they go and kind of reinvent themselves a bit on every record, how do you feel about the ones that have, they always have that one wall?
Right. Well, here's the thing. It's always going to be a house.
Right.
You know, and there's that one wall, I guess, is I'm still in it.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
See? So, he's got the permits to do it, guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's tough in the punk scene, particularly with that. I mean, look at AFI.
Right.
They're a perfect example of a band that changed so much during the course of their very long existence. I mean, they're still going. And the band has found ways to like do side projects like Black Audio and that horrible straight edge thing that they did a couple years back that nobody but me actually bought.
Yeah,
but in general, they have transitioned and they've done it in ways that have both grown their fan base and also kept the old people kind of happy, except for the very early people who'd still want to hear about like skateboarding.
My mom
and
won't let me listen to my message record.
And I also get why you have to change, because I can't listen to the Queers or Screeching Weasel like I can't enjoy them the way I enjoyed them as a kid. Mm-hmm. Even the Descendants, I have a hard time with their early stuff because it's just, I don't know. Like, I still like some songs that you know, I'm not a cool guy anymore. I get that, but I can't really relate to, you know, I'm looking for that like 13-year-old girl that I've lost out on. And that sounded really bad, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I always felt like, you know, there's certain songs or there's certain records that you always go to. You're like, oh, I really love that first record. That's fine. That record's still going to be there for you. You know, you can still just go back and listen to that record. But if I'm going to continue, you know, writing and playing and touring and doing all the things that make me the person that I need to be, or the husband or the father that I need to be, like I need to keep moving forward creatively. It's just the way it goes.
No, I completely get that, and I appreciate that, and the fact that you're honest about that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I even enjoyed that with My Chemical Romance. I actually did not mind the transition from sonically from album to album, which at first I was like, oh, these guys are nuts, but I get it now that I'm older.
Yeah. It's rough, man. You know, say like, you know, you're in a bigger band like that, like there's definitely ways to bridge an audience into the next thing. It's nice to be able to kind of usher people along and hold them by the hand, you know. But I've always felt like with my solo stuff, like, yeah, maybe there's some songs that are like linchpins that'll help you along, but I can kind of cut it off right away and just do something new.
So do you feel like a good way to bridge that gap is, say, when you do a tour before the album comes out, mm-hmm. so you could drop some of the new stuff in between the old tracks to kind of give, say, the audience a way to kind of dip their toe in the water a little bit.
Right. And see, that gets tricky. About it. Yes, but it also gets really tricky because I feel like in this day and age, like, no matter what you do, if you play a song live, there's most people are watching a show like this, like,
yeah,
sadly.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Once that thing gets played, it's released, you know, and you have to make a very conscious decision if you don't care.
Right.
Or if you want people to hear it the way it was supposed to be heard the first time. How was it?
Or you do what the Misfits did and make everybody bag their phones.
Yeah. Imagine. Those didn't work, by the way.
Yeah.
No, you know what? It didn't. Yes, there were a few people that recorded, but it was surreal being in this, PNC. No, it was at
Prudential.
Prudential. And I was a little bit off the floor, but just to be able to look at this sea of just darkness.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen that in like ages. And yes, I'm sure there's a couple phones up, but quickly you'd see the security guys with flashlights. And I'm just like, it felt kind of nice. Like, yeah. I didn't mind it.
Definitely not a bad thing to have an actual moment.
But I also,
it's pretty nice.
But I also get you can't really like be, you know, it's tough to be the dick. Like, Danzy can do it. It's tough to be like, yeah, I'm to piss off all my fans. Hambone.
Yes.
This has been a great episode so far.
I
really appreciate that. Your hair looks fantastic.
Thank you very much. Still using that new product. Feels good.
And the tiki shirts are fitting you so well these days.
This is not the tiki shirt I was planning on wearing tonight. I was planning on wearing my lucky flamingo shirt that I met Princess Leia in, that I wore for the birth of your child, for the birth of my goddaughter. It's still a little tight. I lost about 10 pounds to fit into this. I got about 10 more to go.
You look fantastic. I'm just going to be very nice to you today.
I'm loving this.
I have a
more of this.
I've just... a few more questions left. How do you keep this from being a job? And I think that's a struggle, especially as we get older. This is the theme of this episode. 100 episodes, we're old. How do you like keep this from being a job?
Well, it's weird because in the same breath, it is my job.
Yeah.
Just so,
I
like,
get it.
You know, like it's strange. I feel like you have to get to a point where you're okay with that. And then also realize that if you couldn't do this for a job, you would still do it even if you had to get a real job.
I told Hambone I never want to make money off this podcast. Like, I just don't want to. He hates that. But I have no interest in making money because I work all day. I make decent money. Right. I don't need to come home. And my one creative outlet I'm going to try to make money off of. I did it for wedding photography for a decade. And I got burnt out because then you have to appease a client who wants their particular...
That's a very specific clientele.
That I get. But I think that you... It's hard to take a stance on, you know, like, no, I'm not going to do... You know, I'm not going to make any monetary value off of this.
It's your job. I'm not telling you shouldn't. I'm just trying to find, like, if you've gotten that point of, like, not want burnout, but, like, you know, shit, like, I have to make a living doing this. But it's, and I'm sure it was at some point in my chem, you guys probably were like, well, we got to go this way or this way. But that was also a time where you had a major label involved. I don't know if life was different, if it was different when you had that, the world was different.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, yeah. At that time, like, you know, there was, there's large investments going, but, like, We were doing well enough that people trusted us to kind of make the right artistic decisions. It's strange. It's a very fine line between saying, you know, you don't want to be to the point where you're a slave to someone to make the dollar, you know, but you can be okay mentally and with your conscience, like being like, hey, no, I do this and I make a good living at it. But it's still fulfilling on an artistic level. Like, that's a happy medium to have. I feel very fortunate to have had that.
Is it easier now that you're a solo artist who might or might not just fire his band every time you have a new album? Is it easier now, though, that it's you and you're in control of?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, when you're in a band, it's totally different. Like you have four or five other people that you're working with, and that you're artistically like trying to appease and make a grander thing out of. When you're the only one at the helm and things don't make the record unless they come from your heart or your head, that's real easy because you could just be like, fuck it, blow it all up. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You don't answer to anyone. Yeah, that's a lot easier. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's totally different.
I don't know. You see, for me, I work better like with a decent team of creatives where like I like to bounce ideas off people and like, shit, I can't play drums. Like, that's the example.
Yeah, no, here's the thing. At times it can be lonely because I'm a huge fan of that immediate reaction too, where you're like you're inspiring people and you're getting inspired by other things, and you can have that with certain musicians in a setting of you still being kind of like the boss, like you know, it doesn't get past you. You have these moments of like writing together and doing certain things, but at the end of the day, you're like, all right, well, you're gonna edit everything and kind of put it all together and be like, this works, this doesn't work, this isn't, maybe this is would work within a band setting, but this is a different kind of project, you know.
You have three kids.
I do.
You have twins.
I do.
Like, blows my fucking mind just thinking of like, I can just, my travel schedule alone with one kid for my day job is nuts. Is it a struggle at all? You know, it sounds horrible, like to leave your kids to go do your job. Right. Like, especially as you're getting older, is it rough?
It's. I feel like even harder now because they know that I'm gone. Like usually, in the past, it was out of sight, out of mind. You know, and I found that, you know, they say like, oh, doesn't Skype and all these things make it easier? And it doesn't. It makes it easier for you. You get to see them, but then when you're in their forefront, you know, then they start to miss you. But when you're out of sight, they, you know, their lives go on. Nowadays though, you know, my girls are eight, going to be nine this summer. And, you know, Miles is six. It's a lot harder. They can tell you that they don't want you to go. And it's hard because, you know, this is what you do. And I know that without this side of my personality, my artistic side, the side that can go out and play shows and write records and do these things, I can't be the dad that I want to be without getting to do this thing. And it sucks. Like it is a bit selfish, but I think in the grand scheme of things, it just works out to everyone's benefit, you know? And I miss a lot and it sucks. The one thing that I will say is when I am home, it's 24/7 dad. So they do get that. Like, I feel like if I were to work like a 9-to-5 in the city somewhere or something like that, like I probably wouldn't see them as much as I see them when I'm home.
Yeah. You know? No, I get that 100%. Yeah. I see my kid, literally we keep him up later than we probably should.
Right.
Because we just want to have some, we're selfish. We want some time with him.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to see him tonight. That sucks. I got to see him for like, what, the 2 seconds we ran upstairs.
See your other kid.
Yeah. I got But no, I get it. And these type of questions I never would have asked like 20 years ago when I was doing a Life in the Bungalow.
Right.
But I do think about it, wrestlers and musicians that tour. It's like, when do you see your kids? I feel like so bad. Last question, unless you have a question.
I'm good.
Hambone, were you his boss, I guess? Like, did that mean? Because I've read that band wasn't really your band. You kind of like landed into it.
Leathermouth?
Yeah, Leathermouth.
That was a weird.
Was Brett Gurewitz your boss? Did you ever meet Brett? Like, did you actually? Okay.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Brett, he's one of my heroes. It. Like, he's like literally, like, I always talk about who I would stand for. It's probably Brett.
Right.
And, you know.
He's a great guy, man. And really, really smart, too.
But I want to know about Hambone. Fuck Brett. Like,
with that band, it was really strange. I didn't start that band. I was actually asked. I asked to join because they didn't have a singer really. And so I liked the music a lot. I wrote some lyrics. I said, hey, listen, if you don't get a singer by this date, I'll be home. Let's just schedule a practice and we'll do it. Ended up, guy never worked out. I did a couple practices. We wrote a record, recorded it. And then I got it signed, met with Brett, played it for him. He loved it. And then like a few weeks later, they all quit because they found Jesus. And it was like, what the fuck do I do now?
I told Hambone about that. So I read that. I don't know. Maybe it was your Wikipedia or something.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, Hambone, what the fuck? Like, were you one of the ones that found Jesus?
No,
I'm the replacement for did they join a cult or something? It wasn't Scientology or anything like that. If you're part of that, I'm sorry.
I think it was like a.
I don't know. I just want to make sure. I don't know if our guests are Scientology. You need to tell me that first. Sorry. Go ahead.
I'm not. No. I think it was like a really strict born again type deal with like a pastor who.
This is so insane.
I know. Had like a lot of control over what they did and didn't do and told them that they couldn't be a part of the band any longer. And what drove me nuts was that while we were writing the record, I said to them too, like, because like, you know, they were Christian and stuff. And I said, like, listen, if there's anything that's off limits that you would feel comfortable with me like singing or saying on this record, like, tell me now. Like, I'm cool with that. Like, I'll work around it or whatever. And we were like, no. And so I did what I did. And I guess it was like one of those things where it was like, no, it's cool. That's too much.
I really thought someone hacked your Wikipedia or just like.
No, that shit's true. That's true, man.
But back again, you hired Hambone. What is the most wonderful, crazy thing about Hambone that he won't give up anything? Like, this guy has toured in bands.
Uh-huh.
He's been around. We did a Behind the Music Hambone. It was the worst episode we ever did of My Thai Happy Hour because this motherfucker hasn't done shit that he will confess to. So I'm just trying to find out.
Allegedly.
Is he really just the most, I don't want to say square, but kind of square? Like, Hambone, is there anything that we should know? Like, any story, anything about Hambone? And then I'll plug Casual Interactions as, like, you know, to find out more, but even though you don't really get into anything about you on that either.
I think we do, though. We do. Like, I think the fact that I could have been in a band with Hambone, right? Like, years and years ago, and then all of a sudden be like, hey, listen, I have this other band that's like this hardcore band that I need a band for because.
They all became Christian because
a pastor took my band away. Hey, will you come on tour real quick and join this band? And he was like, "Yeah, sure, I'll do that." Like, how could you be square and
Hambone's do that? Really the greatest person in the world.
Oh yeah,
thank you very much for letting us pick your mind and like torment you. I know this is about as good as our interviews get. Well, we try. We've had some pretty bad. This one's actually a very good one.
Hey, listen, everything above Bruce the fucking Barber Beefcake is gravy.
Look, every month we do the punk rock canon.
We do.
Last time Krampus came on and did Simple Plan, it didn't go too well.
This time we went back.
Well, luckily Krampus is gone and we are going to do another real one this time. We're doing the Refused State of Punk. It was turned 20 last October, and I thought this was a perfect band to bring you in because I see a lot of influence on your bands and just most modern punk rock today. I feel borrows heavily from Refuse, or at least were inspired by their ability to rebuild punk rock almost.
Right.
I have a better word that I forgot
I think
what it
re-imagine
was.
Is reimagine is what you're
looking for. And
speaking of Hambone School.
That album, I think, was a quintessential. First of all, I can't believe it was 98.
Yeah.
I was going to say, as far as Shape of Punk, like I guess the Ornette Coleman like record that they kind of named it after, like it's one of those Babe Ruth call your shot things, like where if that doesn't go well, you're remembered as such an asshole for saying, like, you know what I mean? Like, no, listen, seriously, this record's so good that we're gonna change everything. Like, oh, sure you are.
But that's what happens.
But you're only a genius if it works out.
It's true, but they broke up because, like, and I don't know what, you know, they say it was a commercial failure. I don't think they gave it enough time to become a commercial failure. I mean, there was bands on Epitaph like DFL at the time that, like, I don't think you could judge them on, like, on an album, let alone something like this. Came out on October 27th, 1998 on Burning Heart. Over Here was distributed by Epitaph.
Mm-hmm.
It was, they're a Swedish punk rock band. This is their third album.
Right.
They transitioned from being a very run-of-the-mill kind of hardcore. They were on Victory, and they sounded a lot like the Victory bands of the time for their first two albums, albeit not quite as, like, Earth Crisis-y, or strifey, but you know, more like snap casey, I think is a good way to say it. And they released this album, and it's like a jazz fusion hybrid of punk and ambient noise soundscapes.
Yeah.
And it came out, and just like, I was just, what the hell am I listening to? And I reviewed it for Life in a Bungalow. I made sure I had a double check. I actually gave it a good review, though I was like, what the fuck is this? But it's good. I don't know what I'm listening to, but I like it.
Because, you know, like 20 years later, if you walked it back, I think people would understand.
No, but especially since I'm working on compiling all of the old Life in a Bungalow stuff, I'd look really dumb if I lied about it.
I feel like there's a lot of people that gave that album a shit review and are kicking themselves now.
I actually noted that I reviewed it after reviewing a Duncan Sheik album. So
wide berth.
Yeah, I was getting so much free shit back then. I was reviewing everything that was Atlantic Records at the time. But this album really changed what would become, I think, like progressive hardcore almost. Talk us a little about how, like, were you influenced? Where were you when you heard this album? Did you hate it at first, Frank?
No, I think that when I first heard it, I had a hard time closing my mouth. Like, it was just like one of those, holy shit, what is this type moments. And I feel like I know I definitely bought it from a distro at a show.
Mm-hmm. Did you get Rick Life?
It's possible. It's possible I bought like a bootleg Weezer hoodie and a refused record.
It's some spark plugs.
Yes, definitely. But I remember it was the CD version. I put it on the ride home and could not believe what I was hearing. Also then too, I remember around the same time I'd seen the video for New Noise, probably on The Box or something, right? Or whatever was happening in the 90s.
The Box.
Right?
Yeah.
And The Box. Dude,
there's something about that visual with that band was so fantastic. There's a the weird like Halloween mask that run through, and there's that one scene where Dennis like kind of like is singing and then all of a sudden like fixes his hair in the lens. Was like such a moment. I tried to steal that 100,000 times,
and the thing was like
never came off as snotty.
That's because they're Swedish.
Yeah,
I think it's because we're American. It's where it came. But what about you?
So for me, at first when I heard it, I was listening to a lot of Drawbox and bands of that ilk.
Who, by the way, did
are
you
getting
see
back
that?
Together? I'm so excited.
What the fuck?
Going to Brooklyn Steel to see them.
I don't think that's even close of a comparison, Drawbox to the Refused, but yes.
Well, no, but it is in a lot of ways, because Drawbox is very percussive and very melodic on a very primal level, and a lot of what the Refused was doing something very much similar to that, but very much more progressive than that, a little more futuristic, if you will. Now, the thing is, when I went back and I was listening to this record on the days leading up to the show, I kind of had a moment where I'm like, I could just hear them. Like, they totally, like, because I initially thought it came out in 1994.
And, I thought 94 as well, by the way.
And I'm like, wow, so this like was precursor to At the Drive-In, precursor to Converge. You know, anything that would sound like that, like this is what it was influenced by, but this actually came out after Converge and At the Drive-In.
To be fair, I saw Converge open up for Weston at the Masonic Temple in 94, so they would have been around the same time, but Converge hadn't become what they would become.
Right, yeah. So yet. I think that the bands that I think get influenced, like Converge and like At the Drive-In, there is definitely the albums that they put out before The Shape of Punk to Come. And then there are the albums that they put out after The Shape of Punk to Come. The albums that they're best known for. The albums that people are like, well, this is everything. This is what I want music to sound like.
Right.
And, you know, even I even heard it in my chem in bands that were coming out around the same time, because this record is very, very specific. Like, it's hard, you know, when we do the punk rock canon sometimes, you know, we go back and forth, and there's a lot of joking around. But this record's a very serious record in that, like, I don't think there'd be a Muse without The Shape of Punk to Come. You know, bands that have even gotten to the point where they've got major label success, they've got crossover success to what would be, you know, they started out as kind of like an alternative rock band or whatever you were calling them at the time, to now it's like, oh, you know, they're played on mainstream radio. You know, these hit songs that a lot of people have. I mean, even I would even go so far as saying people who like digitally design music for like hip hop and other styles of music, like you hear The Shape of Punk to Come in so many different genres. So my vote right off the bat, I'll tell you, is this is going in. I will fight you.
So I was trying to get up for it. This album came out. They did a tour that lasted 8 days And then they broke up. Like, and it supposedly is a show where like a riot broke out in some basement. They couldn't book themselves out of basement shows with this album.
It's crazy.
Which is kind of crazy. I think that says something about your booking agent a little bit too.
Also, try to recreate the songs off this record in a basement show has got to be really, it's really
crazy.
Difficult.
It's got to be tough. I saw them, so I never saw them back then. I think they played Handy Street. But I just didn't. But I think they played that when they were still like a Victory Records style band. But this, obviously, those 8 days were the only dates you got to see them
you
when
know,
they played.
I want to say that I've never actually met a Nickelback fan in person. And I've also never met a person who's actually seen them refused. Like,
well,
like
back then.
Yeah, the original lineup, yeah.
Yeah. I know a lot of people did because they did Rutgers. So I know people who saw them play that show because you went to Handy Street when
That's
you went to
did.
Rutgers
yeah.
back then. I saw them at Terminal 5 when they did their first reunion thing.
Wow.
And they were incredible, but you could do all the weird nuances when you're
right.
playing Terminal 5
right.
and have a great sound system. They broke up. They felt this was a commercial disaster. I think the real truth was there may have been some issues with the band internally.
It's hard to be married to five different people.
But also, he went out and formed the International Noise Conspiracy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
At the moment when like garage rock blew up and they had a nice healthy career doing that too, released some very good albums. They reunite for what do you call it? The thing in the desert,
Coachella.
Yeah.
Then they like didn't play for a while and then they came back like all in.
Well, I think when you play Coachella, they kind of back the money truck up. You're good for a while.
Like the Misfits took a huge break between
Book Us,
like Riot
we'll
Fest.
Go. Yeah.
What, Pensy Prep?
No.
By the way, I've been trying to get him to re-release those as vinyl, and he won't let me talk about it. And I have you sitting next to me, so I might.
Oh, boy.
Just saying, if you wanted to, I'd be happy to buy one. But I won't say that in front of him. He's getting embarrassed right now. Bring that up on Casual Interactions. George wants Pensy Prep vinyl.
Did you submit a question? We put a thing out for questions.
I probably should. I'm behind an episode. I'm sorry. It's been a rough. I've been listening to Bad Blood, that book about the lady who created that drug. I'm sorry. I will just get back on target here.
So punk rock canon?
Yes. So I was actually thinking, and I have a question for you. What happened with the Refuse is like, imagine if you guys released Black Parade and then like 8 days later into your tour, we're like, yep, we're done. Like, that's it. I mean, that's kind of the level that became.
But here's the thing too. Like, imagine going that in on a record, like that batshit crazy on a record and putting everything into it and then putting it out and no one gets it.
Well, that's the whole.
That'll break a
band. It's Pet Sounds. It is like the '90s version of like Brian Wilson going crazy and making this record. It's like why doesn't anyone get what I'm doing?
So I could see that.
Yeah,
you know,
I get it.
Like if we put out Black Parade and people were like, "This sucks," and you're dressed like mariachis,
but I don't think people,
we would fucking have broken up.
I don't think people said that sucks. I think the reviews were overall positive. I think it was.
I don't know.
A combination of like there is issues between the band, but also I think they were like, why the fuck are we putting our blood and guts into this and playing like basement shows? You know, it's the whole the Ramones thing when they broke up. We're like, fucking Green Day's doing like MSG and we're still playing. We're the City Gardens house band. Mm-hmm. I think it was a little bit more of that.
Yeah, I can see
and,
that.
And, you know, I don't think anyone, I don't think it was a commercial failure, not a critical failure. And that's
even at 8 weeks?
I don't know.
8 days.
I think
eight dates.
Yeah.
Oh,
eight dates.
Okay.
Eight tour dates.
Right, I mean,
I want to know how long after it was released.
I couldn't figure that. I did some digging. I couldn't find it.
It would make sense if it was released in 94 and they broke up in 98.
That would make a lot
so much
more
sense.
I went to Ozfest 1 year and both the Disturbed and Crazy Town covered New Noise.
Wow.
Separately.
That will make you break up.
That'll do it. That'll, yeah.
That'll do it. Right
come,
there.
My lady. Like, come, my lady. Now we're going to do a Refuse song.
I mean, it
Holy
was
shit.
Cool when every band was doing Seven Nation Army because it was Seven Nation Army.
Yeah.
One of the greatest modern songs like made. But no, it was Crazy Town covering. Covering New Noise.
Yeah.
Between Butterfly.
I would quit music too.
Wow.
So you give this definitely in the punk rock.
100%.
You definitely put this in our imaginary punk rock. What we do is we then put it up for
but
a vote.
Crazy Town's version.
Crazy Town's version.
Okay.
We'll put that one up.
Definitely.
We put this up on my Facebook because I have the most amount of friends and we have the vote. And clearly that's how you figure out whether something should be in the punk rock canon or not. You know, I did a press release when we launched this and it went up on Reddit and they called us a bunch of fucking idiots. And
that tracks.
It's the punk rock canon.
That tracks to Reddit.
Our first one was the Offspring Smash and it failed miserably. So there's that.
Okay.
I still maintain it should have went in.
Well, here's the thing. What are you basing this off of?
We're just doing it based on
just like what you like.
We like it. Now, that's how we pick what's gonna be talked about. Uh-huh. But the fact is, no, that's not true. Because we're gonna do like Black Flag Damage. You hate that album.
I'm not a fan of Black Flag.
So, really?
Yeah.
So, I don't like The Offspring either, but I voted for them.
Okay, we do it based on like I was a critic at one time. Hambone's been in bands. We're just talking about at our age. What do we think that punk albums that stand the test of time?
Okay,
we try to do one album per band though. We're gonna hit that wall with some. Yeah, bands.
But it's purely like your taste and
well, it's stand the test of time and affected music.
Like, all right, so there's criteria.
There's criteria.
So not just subjective.
I voted for The Offspring because I said, you know, with 11 million copies of that record sold, I guarantee
independently.
Yeah,
that's
it'll never
huge.
Be beat. It'll never be beat.
And I maintain that because that happened, a lot of bands that we love today exist because that put a lot of guitars in a lot of hands. Because
absolutely.
Because whether people will cop to it or not, when they get a couple shows under their belt, they bought that record, and because of that record, they wanted to go and start a band and maybe wrote your favorite song. So for me, I don't like The Offspring, and I think the record sucks. However, I do think it's culturally significant, and that's why I voted for it. Yes, and oh man, they fucking just dumped all over my fucking
The Offspring, really?
Cleveland Steamer up here.
I feel like, you know, you have to take that kind of shit into consideration.
Yeah,
you know, like, because here's the thing: this is either a good thing or a bad thing. Without a record like that that made that much money and that much sales at an independent level, would there be as much attention to say, like, you know, that genre or these bands just kind of like making music in their basement? I know for a fact that because of shit like that happening, you know, bands were then getting calls that were in practice studios or getting money synced in to, like, here's the thing: you're not going to have labels invest in Sonic Youth's and the Flaming Lips anymore. Like,
Civ would not have been on a major label.
Exactly. You know, Quicksand.
Boom.
Like, this is huge. You know?
I mean, and I agree 100%. We're not here to talk about The Offspring, though. I already lost that battle. Smash changed my life when I was a kid. But, you know, that's so be it. So be it. It's not in the punk rock canon. I think this is the only one absolute failure. We had one other one fail. That's okay. And now we're going to talk about the G.G. Allin documentary that dropped on Showtime after we had just talked about the American Hardcore one. Like, Showtime is just
crushing it. Crushing it with the documentaries.
I've realized some of these documentaries actually were made a while back. It looks like Showtime's just been buying them up lately.
Right.
And whoever the buyer is there who's gotten these is just, I don't know. I'm very excited. Last week we talked about the Godfathers of Hardcore. Was that the name of it?
The Godfathers of Hardcore, yeah.
Yeah, the Agnostic Front one. Excellent. The Mauro Ranallo one was very good.
The Bipolar Rock and Roller.
Not punk rock, but still good.
And fantastic.
This time they dropped the Allens. What's the actual name of it?
All in the Family, but it's a play on their name, which is Allen, you know?
And it's the story of G.G. Allin's mom and brother surviving. It's surviving G.G. Allin.
Right. Now, this actually, I figured it out. This actually was recorded a few years back and probably was recently acquired because the end of the movie, it deals with the 20th anniversary of his death. And they got together for the 20th anniversary of his death. So what this documentary is about, G.G. Allin was, the best way I could describe it for someone who doesn't know who G.G. Allin is essentially a punk rock performance artist. He mixed punk and country together, and he would do these shows to kind of like take rock and roll to its like nth degree. Like, you'll go and, you know, you'll see theatrics when you look at, say, the Bohemian Rhapsody movie with Queen, where, you know, Freddie Mercury is flamboyant. There's a lot of costumes. There's a lot of extravagance going on. So the extravagance that was going
such
on
a
is
stretch. Holy shit!
Well, hold on, man. So the other side of that flamboyancy and the other side of that showmanship.
Eating your own shit.
Is eating your own shit and covering yourself in your own shit, pissing on the crowd, having drumsticks shoved up your naked drummer's asshole every single night.
He did not have his Christian backing band bail on him.
No. Yeah, I feel like he was a little worse than whatever you could have possibly written in that record. Well, the thing is, he was a punk rock performance artist, and he had no real compulsion to want to live. He did all the drugs. He said all the most horrible things. He wrote really crazy songs. And
he was like Hunter S. Thompson if he did more drugs. Like, more drugs. All the drugs.
I'm going to say Hunter S. Thompson never spread shit all over himself.
But maybe he would have if, like, he did heroin. G.G. Allin is what Marilyn Manson wishes he could have been. But nobody has the ability to eat their own shit except for G.G. Allin.
And Divine.
and divine. I mean, it's an incredible documentary. I love the fact that it really touches on his mother.
Well, let's take it back a second, because there was an original G.G. Allen movie made many years ago called Hated,
by Todd Phillips. No, by a famous director whose name I'm blanking
on.
It's
escaping me right now.
Someone Phillips. I'll look it up while you.
But it's a very, very pro G.G. Allen. Like, oh, he was like this deranged rock and roller. Like, you know, it's the kind of thing where you are going to buy into his gimmick by watching it. And you're watching it because you're a fan. You're watching it because you've heard about all this wild shit and you want to check it out. And there's actual video of him like smearing, taking a shit right on stage and shoving a microphone up his ass and like singing like about like infecting people with AIDS and, you know, whatever kind of crazy shit he wanted to like spew from his mouth at the time. His running gag was that he was going to kill himself on stage on Halloween night. And the reason why he never did it was because he got arrested.
Well, yeah, he also didn't. I mean, oh Lord, G.G. Allen's such. G.G. Allen would make a great. I'd love to hear a psych, like someone do a thesis on G.G. Allen, like a psychiatrist, just like go back, and like that man had so many issues.
So he died. He died in the early 90s. He died of an accidental heroin overdose in New York City.
Early, I think, like 93.
It was 93. Yeah, because it was 20 years later, 2013, when they were making the movie. And then it finally got picked up 5 years after that. So the thing about it is, and I don't know if you guys will agree, like a character like G.G. Allen could not exist in the world that we live in now. A lot of the mystique that was built around it.
He was the first influencer, I believe.
He might. You hear that, Post Malone? Suck it. But that's the thing, you know, he couldn't exist nowadays, because the minute that something would go viral, and like someone would film it, it would go viral, go right up to the cloud. People see it on Twitter and everywhere. They would run it through that like 15 minutes of fame, because 15 minutes of fame when we were coming up versus 15 minutes of fame now is a lot shorter of a time period. It would get blown completely out of proportion. It would get blown out of the water, and then something else would happen and something would replace it. So back when he's doing that thing, there's this whole mystique around it where you hear about this. It's all in hushed tones. Now, when I first heard about G.G. Allen, I was like 15 and a half working at the A&P making $5.35 an hour. I was actually cleaning shit out of toilets at the A&P in like Clifton, New Jersey. And I'm hearing about G.G. Allen, what he's doing. I'm like, why the fuck would anyone pay to see a guy smear shit all over himself? I get paid to like wipe it off of walls. It's terrible. It's not fun.
Except when you do it in bed.
Well, you know.
I mean, you know.
Different kind of party. That's why, you know, I have rubber sheets.
There's been at least one of your crafty girls that's been like, I like to draw with
no,
her.
She
George, made the Virgin Mary. I can't.
No! My God! You almost made it through an entire episode.
I had an offer to go. Like, I had friends like, let's go see G.G. Allen. And it was towards the end, because it had been like 92, 93. And I was like, I don't want to see a guy who throws shit at the audience.
Yeah.
Like, I have no interest. This doesn't do anything
like
to a
really bad Gallagher.
Right. So, the worst case scenario for Gallagher. So what Hated was, which was like a love letter to G.G. Allen, you have All in the Family, which is a movie that very much deals with the grief about losing a son and losing a brother, and kind of how that grief just kind of stays with you. And it's interesting because Merle Allen is still running the Murder Junkies with a new singer, and he kind of constantly tours. And what he says in the very beginning is like, hey, you know, my brother's actually giving me the means to live and survive, because like I'm keeping his memory alive, but he's actually keeping me.
Yeah.
Which, and it's a very like, it's a very sentimental and sweet film until they start showing pictures of G.G. Allen and like clips of G.G. Allen. He's like smeared in shit. And you're like, oh, that's right. Like, this is a movie about grief, but this is also them grieving a guy who had like kind of a split personality and he liked poo play.
So Dino made me the most depressed. Like
that was
That
was rough. I feel like the fact that he was like, oh yeah, you know, I got all these old drumsticks. You should were these the ones that were in your ass? Because you could probably sell these online. I'll sell these online for you. That was hard to watch.
The drummer Dino, who in the original Hated movie was a sad human being there. I mean, because he looked a mess in that, is now old and living the exact same life he did back then. It's just, it's sad. It's very sad. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm glad they're making a living, and I'm glad they're still living through that legacy, but...
Well, it's legacy, but whenever they show clips of the shows that they're doing, there's like 20 people there.
Right.
And one person definitely showed up just to shove drumsticks up this dude's ass. And then, like, you know, they're in the Perkins together. Like, I could sell those drumsticks for you. And then next thing you know, he's, like, asking his mom, like, maybe Dino can come live with you. And his mom's like, no.
It's Gigi Allen was just, I don't even know where to begin. It's just a sad tale of it. Yes. Okay, so you called him a performance artist. Yes and no. I remember seeing that footage of him at that college, I don't know where, if it was NYU or it was in Hated, where he went and he would give, like, spoken word conversations, and then halfway through he would just shit and start throwing it at college students. That's clearly a performance art versus a band, you know, presentation, a performance.
Well, I mean, there's a clip in the movie where they're showing him, and it's in the 80s, and he's like, I've been in town for like 7 days. This is like the first time I've eaten in 7 days. And someone's like, you go to shit? He's like, well, you want to? So why don't you take a shit? Bring me a hamburger. I need to eat. I'm like this. It's
here's the thing. I mean,
I don't even.
You talk about the childhood of it, and you know, I think this documentary kind of delves into that a little bit about their father.
Yeah.
And how, like, you know,
they allege that he abused the kids. Yeah. And, you know, so which is fucking terrible.
You know, I think what you have is it performance art? Is it just a fucking guy that is, you know,
needs help.
Pretty fucked up. Yeah, needs help. Right. Or is it just somebody that's a fucking asshole? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And these are all things that he would probably admit to if he was still here, but he's not. And I don't know.
Quick anecdote. I was working at the RX place in West Orange for the precursor to Walmart back in 94, and he had died recently.
Yeah.
And one of our managers there used to be a bouncer at the Pony, at the Stone Pony, and he would just tell us stories of like Gigi Allen performing there, and the bouncer, like, security just walked out.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, fuck this, because we're not going to, like, stop him either, because he's throwing shit at people. Like, we're not going to stop him. We're not going to work. We're just walking. Like, want nothing to do with this.
Like, most people don't even, like, clean up after their dogs.
And
could you imagine being a bouncer at the fucking Stone Pony, having to drag someone out? Oh, and now I'm covering shit.
And I don't know if it's the first time they showed it, but in the documentary on Showtime, they showed the aftermath of his last show, where he basically destroyed the gas station or whatever it was called. And then you just see him walk off, like, fucked up with, like, a girl in each arm, covered in shit, wearing some, like, loincloth. And, like, he gets into a cab, and, like, that's the last we see of him. They say he killed himself, but he really, like, OD'd.
Yeah, he's an accidental overdose.
And they found him, like, in an alley somewhere. It was, like, a sad, tragic tale. It's just, you know, it's the opposite end of the punk rock we've been talking about. It's, you know, Gigi Allen.
It's not a feel-good movie, folks.
Yeah. No.
Gigi Allen never appealed to me as a musician. I didn't really love his music. Some of the older stuff actually wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
But the story, his legend, will always be bigger than... No one's ever matched that.
No.
Right.
But the documentary I highly recommend.
I do recommend the documentary. It's a little bit of a bummer. You do really feel for his mother. You feel for his brother up until you start seeing him making poo art. It's gotta be a thing that runs in the family.
Too.
Yeah, it was so
Did
weird.
Did you get to the poo art part?
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I didn't know that was realize it was Merle doing that. I thought it was old stock footage. No, he, like, at one point poops, takes it, and starts making a mural and sells it. And that's crazy.
Listen, man, God bless a man. Hustle, make some money. I don't know.
There's a lot of poo in this.
A lot of poo in this movie.
And, like, I talk about my poo a lot, but not in this way.
No, it's different.
Like, I can't
different
do
kind of
it.
Party.
Well, this has been a great, great 100th episode. I think we did very well.
I think we did. George,
it's not even terribly long.
It's getting there. What are you excited about this week?
I'm excited. We're going to do that.
We're doing that. It's 100 episodes.
I'm excited. We're going to talk about next week the Double Fire Festival documentaries. I saw the Hulu one. I can't wait to see the Netflix one.
Yeah.
I am so blown. Like, I am, again, old man. Like, I just don't get, like, the millennial thing.
Yeah.
But rich, entitled, influential millennials are, like, my favorite thing in the world to dissect. Mm-hmm. And this is a movie about them. Like, they paid $25,000 a pop to go to an island to see Blink-182. And I'm like, you could have seen them with Frank on the Honda Civic Festival. I think I did with, like, Jimmy Eat World or something. I don't know, I could be completely making that up. But I think that happened. I just, that was my favorite. And I saw the Hulu one, worth watching. The Netflix one, I'm excited to see.
Yeah.
Everything that's wrong in this world in two documentaries. What favorite shit do you have this week? What do you love this week?
So what I do love this week is that it's our 100th episode.
Aww.
And I want to say thank you, because it's wild, because, you know, he grabbed me to start doing this podcast, and I mean, I never really gave podcasting much of a thought, but it ended up being a very great third act so far for me. So you have taught me everything I know about podcasting, and I really appreciate that about you. And I got you a little token of my gratitude.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What did you wear? Where are you hiding this?
Art.
It's got to be poop art.
Yeah, it's poo art. So it's not wrapped up. I had a bag for it, but then I realized that you had that camera up. I wanted to be able to pull it out. So this is for you, man. Happy 100th episode.
Oh, buddy. I just dropped. Holy shit, that's me.
That's you.
How did you do this? Did you make this?
Oh, I'm not talented enough to make it. But at Funko Frankie on Instagram, Frank in Tennessee is a friend of my friend Carrie. Hi, Carrie. He makes a bunch of custom pops. He made like a custom pop of you as well, Frank. And I saw it. I'm like, oh, he actually did a really good job at that. And I thought, well, shit. So I hit him up on Instagram. I was like, hey, man,
crazy.
How hard would it be to do GLK for 100th episode? So you see it's numbered 100 because it's our 100th episode. It's one of a kind. You're wearing the shirt that
God it is.
Yeah, I think he put some work into this. You are wearing the same shirt that you were wearing when we met Stan Lee. Thanks, buddy. I love you, man.
I got you nothing. I know. I'm so sorry.
That's why this is so good.
I feel like horrible right now. Like,
but you can check him out. If you want a custom pop made, check out at Funko Frankie on Instagram.
I'm taking you to Iron Maiden for your birthday.
Well, so thanks. There you go. See?
This is crazy.
Huzzah.
It looks way more badass to me. It kind of looks like a G.I. Joe figure. Like it's like a breaker.
I've had that. I've been sitting on that for a month. I've been sitting on that for a month. And when I opened up the box and I saw it, I was like, you knocked it right out of the park, buddy. Thank you.
This is better than the belt you got me. I appreciate it. I'm glad we did 100 episodes. Hopefully for 100 more. Really, thank you, Frank, for joining us.
Oh, yeah, my man. Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Do you know what my favorite My Chemical Romance song is? I will tell you right now. You don't get to like say no. Okay. I tell him and it blows his mind. I love Sing.
Really? Okay.
I love it. It's my favorite. I think it's one of the best pop songs ever made.
Thank you.
And when it was all over the Olympics, like I had it on repeat. I bought that album on vinyl. Like I love that song, and I'm not a fan of that type of music as much, but I felt that was one of the best pop songs ever. And my guilty pleasure right now, which I can't stop talking about.
You do love them.
Is the Imagine Dragons. Because I saw this documentary with them on Mormonism. I don't know why.
Are they
Mormon? Yeah, they are. But they're like pro like gays and stuff, so it's okay. But I was like, there would never have been like an Imagine Dragons if there wasn't Sing by My Chemical Romance.
That song,
I felt truly changed pop rock to make it like just, I don't know, I just, the epicness. Right. I don't know why I'm telling you this.
Right on.
I just, nobody ever, like, every time I tell that to people, they laugh at me. So I figure if I tell you that, you can't actually laugh at me.
No, that's awesome.
I don't know why I felt I should tell you that. I love that song.
I'm glad you did.
Guys, thank you very much. Let me just cue up our music. I was not expecting to go this long. And then you like blew my mind with the fucking pop. Hambone.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much. Thank you for 100 episodes. Thank you so much, Frank, for joining us today. Let's go. Take us out one more time.
Everybody, thanks for joining us for 100 episodes. And here's to 100 more. Everybody, remember, be nice. Aloha.